Welcome to the second sermon in our sermon series entitled, Follow Me. Jesus calls us to follow Him. In this series, we will count the cost of following Jesus, entering a life of discipleship, and learning to disciple others. Open your Bible to Philippians 4, verses 8 and 9. And let's begin.
I was introduced this week by Sports Illustrated to Susan Lindgren. She was born in 1899 in Paris, France. And it turned out she was a tennis phenomenon. Now I'll have you know I know a thing or two about tennis. I took a tennis class when I was in college. Okay, so hey, that counts. It happened to be, it was offered the time I had to put a gym class in, and it was tennis, and I was out there banging a ball around. So I'm gonna feel tennis-y today. But it turns out Susan was the real deal. When she was 20 years old, she played Dorothea Lambert Chambers, who was the 7-time Wimbledon winner, and she beat her in 2 sets. She went on to win the French Open the same year and the 1920 a gold medal in the Olympics at Antwerp. Her biographer said that in her amateur career, she won 341 matches and only lost 7. A reporter asked her, "So what is your method?" And Susan said this: "My method, I don't think I have any. I just throw dignity to the winds and think of nothing but the game. I try to hit the ball with all my force and send it where my opponents aren't." Sounds like a good game plan. Susan was an innovator. In her world, all the ladies served underhanded, and she was the first lady to do the overhand serve. At one time in New York City, she was as popular as Babe Ruth. Her biographer said that her father was her teacher, trainer, advisor, coach, agent, manager, protector, mentor, and sometimes even her tormentor. Susan was a case. From time to time, her dad, if he didn't think she was doing well, between sets, would throw out a little flask of cognac and tell her to have a drink. She needed it. It is interesting, though, that her father mentored her. It turns out in life, we don't have to reinvent everything. There are people who have figured things out in life, and if we'll let them mentor us, we can do better and make less mistakes. I am a firm believer that everybody should have mentors in their lives. People who are a little bit ahead of you, and they've experienced things you haven't, or they've figured out things you haven't, and they can make it easier for you to make progress. I don't think any of us should ever be so proud that we can't accept mentoring. Now, I want to talk to you who are my age. It's one thing to be mentored when you're young by somebody older than you. But you know what? We're all going to reach an age where we're going to have young mentors too. There are young people in the world who don't have as much experience as I have, but they're better pastors than I am. I'm going to learn from them. We need to accept mentors wherever we can find them. Do you hear me? Mentoring has been a core part of Christianity from the beginning. If you read the Gospels, Jesus picked some guys and mentored them. And then he sent them out to do the work, and when they came back, he debriefed with them. Paul was a mentor. You can hear Paul mentoring in Philippians chapter 4, beginning at verse 8. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Do you hear the mentoring there? What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things. Do you hear the mentoring there? And the God of peace will be with you. So let's look at what Paul said and see if it won't help us find the kind of people who make good mentors. If you're looking for a mentor, what kind of person are you looking for? Well, Paul says, first of all, you're looking for a person who can mentor you to think right. I don't know about you, but when I'm thinking right, I'm invincible. When I'm not thinking right, I can be knocked down by a fifth grade girl. Church, is it true? Not that fifth grade girls aren't tough, but you get the point. When we're thinking right, we live a better quality of life and we accomplish more. When we can't think right, we handicap ourselves. And we also make the people around us miserable. So Paul says, you're looking for a mentor that can help you think right, and this is what right thinking looks like. Every one of us need to be mentored to think about the truth. Because every day you're bombarded by propaganda. Church, every single day we are bombarded by propaganda. The trouble is, it presents itself as truth. I want people in my life who keep helping me connect to what is true, not to propaganda. Why? Because Jesus said, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. There is a freedom in life that only comes when I'm able to think consistently about what is true. Church? And don't think your favorite cable news channel has the corner on truth. Just to remind you, they're in business to make money, not to disseminate truth. And if they can make money by telling you what you want to hear, they're going to do it. But church, doesn't make your life quality any better. Know the truth, because the truth sets you free. We all need mentors who keep connecting us again and again with the truth. This second word is the one I like the best in the list. It can be translated noble, but its really best translation is awe-inspiring. I want mentors in my life who connect me with the awe of life. It's just easy to get lost in the mundane of everyday living. It's easy to slip into a boring life. It's easy to simply go with the flow. But we need mentors who say, there's something better than all of this. You have a potential you haven't tapped yet. Look at the awe of life, church. We all need mentors who call us to something more awesome than the day-to-day boring that we content ourselves with. Church. I want a mentor who helps me replace regret with awe. There's something very awesome about life if we can tap into it. Church. And then the next word can be translated right or just. So we're going to think about it both ways. I need a mentor who keeps me reminding me that God has a right to have expectations in my life. And I want to be doing what is right in his opinion. Church, I try to talk about this as in many ways as I can. I want divine approval. When my life is over, I want the approval of God. Church. And to have that approval, I need to be reminded again and again, every day I get a choice to do what's right or what's easy. I get the choice to do what is right or self-destructive. Church. And we all need mentors who keep whispering to us and saying, do the next right thing. Just do the next right thing. The second way this word can be translated is just. I want to be right before God and just with humanity. The Bible says a lot about justice. I want to be perfectly clear. I am unapologetically for what is called social justice. You know why? The Bible is. The Bible says we who do well in life, we have to care about people whose lives are broken. If you read the Bible anywhere, again and again, this concept is taught. In the law, Moses taught, if you grow a successful vineyard and people are hungry, you got to let them come in and eat some grapes. Now, they can't bring a bag and start hauling stuff out, but they can sit down and eat some grapes. Church, because it won't kill you to give a poor person some grapes. It's in the law of Moses. And then you get to the time of the prophets, and the prophets say, you've ruined God's culture. All you do is oppress and oppress and oppress. I want mentors in my life who keep saying to me, it is a noble thing to do with your life to provide justice for the broken. Church. It's never wrong to feed a hungry child. That's social justice. Can you hear me? It's never wrong to help someone in need. Now we don't want to patronize and we don't want to create dependency, but justice is hugely important with God. And it makes your life more beautiful to be a person who cares for the broken and the needy. church. And I will not apologize for that. I won't apologize for it. It's the core of Christian message. I need a mentor who helps me think about what is pure, because I live in a debauched world and so do you. Everywhere I look, I'm bombarded with things that cause me to think the wrong thing. You look at a billboard, and there is someone dressed inappropriately on the billboard. Church, you turn on the TV, you're bombarded with this image and that image. Am I right? Everywhere I turn, in this culture, I'm being sent messages that impurity is just fine. A church, I want a pure mind for the quality of the life it gives me. Do you understand? I want a pure mind because my life is better when my thoughts are pure. My life is haunted and compulsive when my thoughts are not pure. Brothers, am I saying the truth? I want a mentor who keeps calling me to purity of thought. Now, I want to apply this in another way. I want to have pure thoughts about the people around me. That means I want to give people the benefit of the doubt. I don't want to be cynical, church. I don't want to have an impure mind that I always see the worst in everybody. Oh, look at that. Church? I want mentors in my life who I trust enough for them to say to me, what's going on in your head? Are you keeping a pure thought life? Church, the quality of your life will be improved, I promise you. We all need mentors who say it's better to have a pure mind. The next word is very interesting. It's a compound word, and it literally means toward friendship. We need to be mentored to think about things that tend toward love and friendship. This whole neighboring sermon series that we just finished. It's all about thinking about things that tend toward friendship. I want a mentor who's reminding me to be a good friend, to treat people right, to care about what they're feeling, to be willing to listen to them and not always be yakking myself. Church? The next word I really like, it's a compound word, and it means to sound well. We need to be mentored to think about things that sound good to the best part of our souls. See, there is a best part of me, and there is a worst part of me, and they like to hear different things. Church? The worst part of me likes to hear bad stuff about people I don't like. I go, yeah, I knew it. Huh? That's the worst part of me. And how does that make my life any better that somebody I don't like made a mistake? How does that make me any better? That just feeds something ugly and broken in me. But there's a good part of my soul, and it likes to hear different things. Church, I want mentors who keep speaking to my soul in the kind of way that my soul is hearing, the best part of my soul is hearing good news. And then we have this great Greek word that gets translated to excellence, but it shows up in all Greek philosophy. It's the word arete, and I need to take a minute to explain it to you. In all of humanity, we agree some things are good and some things aren't, right? The things that are good we call virtues. The things that are not good we call vices, right? Wouldn't most honest people say it is a very good thing for human beings to tell the truth? And it's a flaw to be lying all the time. Wouldn't we agree on that? Now, you might want to fuss with me about, oh, Doc, what if a guy comes to your door with a gun and he's going to kill everybody in the house? Okay, if you can save 50 people by lying, that's one thing. I'm talking about lying to your wife. And you're not saving anybody but your own hide. I'm talking about lying to the people you work with. All right. So when the Greeks used this word arete, they were saying there's something good that all humanity agrees about, and if you're really a good person, you have these qualities. Those are called virtues. And if you're not getting it right as a human being, you're practicing these vices, right? So this word for virtue is, if you want to think about it, it's humanity at its best. I want mentors who keep connecting me with humanity at its best. Humanity at its best. I want mentors who keep saying, there's something better than this. You can do better. You can think better. You can treat people better. I want that kind of mentor in my life every single day. Don't you? And then we're looking for mentors who know what deserves praise. We are a celebrity culture. We have replaced praiseworthy character with celebrity. Church, they're just celebrities. I don't know anything praiseworthy about them, but they get their picture on the news and in those magazines at the checkout line at the grocery store. Church, I want mentors in my life who say, have the kind of quality soul that's worthy of praise. Don't worry about celebrity, worry about the quality of your soul and live a life that deserves to be praised. I want that kind of mentor, don't you? Church? What kind of mentor am I looking for? I'm looking for someone who helps me think about the right thing. I want a mentor who keeps saying, are you sure that's true? I want a mentor who says, there's something awesome about life. If you tap into it, you abandoned the mediocre, boring life and you live at a better quality of existence. I want a mentor who says, just do the next right thing and be just, especially to the broken. I want a mentor who says, the quality of your life goes up if you have a pure mind. I want a mentor who says, keep doing the stuff that makes friendship beautiful and strong. I want a mentor who speaks to the best part of my soul, not the worst. I want a mentor who says there are some things in life that are excellent and try to think about them and pursue them. I want a mentor in my life who says, you want to have quality character that's worthy of praise. You're not looking for empty celebrity. Church? But then Paul says, it's never enough just to think right. You have to have daily right habits. I want mentors who help me have the right daily habits. And listen to what Paul says. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things. Paul says, I've already mentored you in what you should practice. Now let's look at these practices so we can decide who we're looking to mentor us. I'm looking for a mentor who says, you need to do what you know. We have very few excuses. Some of you younger people, I'm going to cut you some slack on this. But by the time you're, I don't know. When you're young, you make mistakes because you don't know, right? When I was 18, I made mistakes because I was ignorant. Maybe 25, 30. But at some point, yeah, some of us are slow learners. That number keeps going up. But at some point in our life, we have to admit the mistakes I'm making, it's not because I don't know better. I do know better, and I do it anyway. Church? Huh? I know better than to be angry when I'm driving. It's not that I don't know that. It's that I don't practice it. I want to ram people in the name of the Lord. I'm really not blaming it on God. It isn't that I don't know better. It's that I don't practice what I already know. I'm looking for mentors who help me and remind me, you know the right thing, just do it. You know the trigger points in your life. Pay attention to them and be ready to handle them differently. Church, I need mentors who remind me to live up to what I already know. The second thing is what you received. You see, Christianity is something that we pass to each other generation to generation. We don't reinvent Christianity in every generation. We sometimes reinvent how we practice it, but we don't reinvent Christianity. So when I was a young man, I wanted to do church very, very different than the church I grew up in. So the way we do service here, look, the church I grew up in had no electric guitars and no drums. The drum was invented by the Antichrist himself, in case you didn't know that. Right? Well, I like this. But we didn't change Christianity because we do music with different instruments. Do you get that? There is a core of Christianity that we received from the people who came before us and we give to the next generation. It isn't always how we do it. It's the core of what Christianity is, right? I want to be mentored, to be reminded that this is the core of Christianity, and when you practice your faith, it looks like this. Church? In our church, this is what we try to say. When you're practicing your faith right, you're finding God's lost kids and helping them come home. If you're not doing anything to help God's lost kids come home, you're not practicing the faith that was given to us generation by generation. You're a Christian today because somebody helped you move closer to Christ. Somebody did. I want to be reminded day by day that there are people out there who've lost their touch with God, and there might be unique moments where I get to help them come a little bit closer to God. Church, I'm not talk about assaulting waitresses at the table with Bible tracts. I'm talking about living the kind of life that it's easy for people to say, maybe I should give God another chance in my life. When we practice our faith, we serve, church. There's no such thing as Christianity without serving. If you're not serving in some way, you're not practicing the faith that you received. The core of Christianity is the adventure of faith. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. We have to be doing things that make us trust in God. And the core of Christianity is generosity. We are generous because it is the faith that we have received. I want to have mentors in my life who keep saying, let me remind you what it really, what the faith you received is. And then the next thing he says, the things that you heard. You know, the things we listen to have a profound effect on us. Do you know that? I listened to a sermon this week by T.D. Jakes, just preaching the house down. I don't know if any of you have seen Bishop Jakes. He pastors a huge church in Texas somewhere. He has to shout because people in his church are standing up and they're shouting so loud he has to shout over them. And he was preaching on the family. And listen what he said. He said, some of you have images in your head that are all wrong because it's what you heard and saw when you were growing up. And those images didn't work in the family you grew up in, and they won't work in the family you're in right now. He said, you have to change what's going on in your head. You have to hear a different message. You have to see a different model. What you have heard profoundly affects what you think and what you do right now. And I'm saying the same things that the bishop said. Some of us have to radically change what we've heard because what we heard wasn't correct. Church, just wasn't right. What we saw wasn't right. And now, if we're going to really practice our faith, we need somebody else speaking something better into us and modeling something better for us. Church. And that's why we all need mentors. And then he says, what you saw in me. You know, sometimes it's a lot easier if you can see somebody else do it first. Right? If you ever tried to put something together, the sheet that comes with it is, God only knows who wrote that thing. You got 25 different bolts, and they just call it bolt C. Yeah, well, thanks. Is there a C on the bolt? No. But several years ago, I went on YouTube, and I watched, I think it was YouTube. I might be giving the wrong people. It might have been Vimeo. I don't know. One of these things you click and watch a video. And I watched one of the world's greatest luthiers seal the wood on a violin. Now, I could have read 250 pages where that was described, and I wouldn't have understood it as well as I did watching him in that 6-minute video where he actually did it and I watched. Church? I had a lot of confidence after I saw him do it because I saw what he did. I didn't have to interpret it. I just saw what he did and then I tried to do it the exact same way. That's mentoring, do you see? Paul said we have to have people in our lives that we stand next to, and while they do something correct, we watch it. Because once we've seen it done correctly, it's a whole lot easier for us to do. Church, isn't it true? So Paul says we need to have people in our lives that we can watch them do it right. And once we've seen them do it right, we can say, I'm going to try to do it this way until I learn how to do it in my own unique way. Church, that's called mentoring. I learned it this way. I do it. I do it, you watch. You do it, I watch. You do it, you do it, somebody else watches. Right? Mentoring. Letting people see what it looks like to do it correctly. All right, so Paul says, we're looking for mentors who remind us of what we already know, who connect us with the Christianity we've received, who help us hear the right things and see the right things. Now, I want to point out both of the verbs, you think about these things and you practice these things, are in the present imperative. It means a command that you just keep on doing it and keep on doing it and keep on doing it. You keep on thinking the right things. It's not enough to do it one day a week. You keep on practicing the right things. It's not enough to do it once a week. You make it the habit of your life. All right. You say, Doc, this seems like a lot of work to me. Well, most good stuff is, right? Most good stuff is a lot of work. But listen, there's a big payoff on this. How does this paragraph end? The God of peace will be with you. See, when I'm thinking about the right things, I experience more of the peace of God and less of the trauma of the world around me. Would you look at the verse right before 8 and 9? We just studied Philippians 4, 8, and 9. Now let's look at the verse just before 8 and 9, verse 7. Listen what it says. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Do you hear that? When I'm thinking about the right stuff, and when I'm practicing the right stuff, my heart and mind is guarded by the peace of God. And frankly, I kind of like to live in that kind of peace. Church, I kind of like to live in that deep sense of well-being that isn't based on everything that I want being correct around me. Now, when I'm thinking about this, I start practicing peace in my daily life, my home, my workplace, and my friendships. And then, Matthew 5, 9, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. My head is in the right place. I'm practicing the right stuff. And guess what? I don't just feel peace myself. I start sharing a peace with the people around me. My home feels more peaceful because I'm thinking right and not being ugly. My home feels more peaceful because I'm doing the right thing and not the selfish thing. Do you see how this works? When we get mentored right, our head is in the right place, and then things around us are better. When I'm getting mentored right, I'm doing the right stuff, and it makes things better around me. Blessed are the peacemakers. They will be called the sons of God. Let me tell you the end of Susan's story. Susan Lindgren. She became the first woman tennis player who was paid. There was no circuit, but an American promoter knew how popular she was and paid her $50,000 to go to several cities in America and play matches with American women. First paid woman tennis player. Well, when she got paid this $50,000, Wimbledon banned her, said you can't ever play here again. And now Wimbledon pays fortunes for people to play there. So guess who was right? Listen what Lindgren said when Wimbledon banned her. Under these absurd and antiquated amateur rulings, only a wealthy person can compete. And the fact of the matter is that only wealthy people do compete. Is that fair? Does it advance the sport? Does it make tennis more popular? Or does it tend to suppress and hinder the enormous amount of tennis talent lying dormant in the bodies of young men and women whose names are not on the social register? Pretty good point, huh? Just weeks before she died, she conducted a tennis clinic for hundreds of young people from Paris, and most of them were not, most of them were common class people. And now I have to tell you the worst part of the story. She died 39 years old. They wrote on her death certificate, pernicious anemia. That means she died of being anemic. But the biographer who wrote the article for Sports Illustrated said, there was a simple shot that every doctor in Paris knew helped anemia. He said she didn't die of anemia. She probably died of cirrhosis of the liver. She probably drank herself to death when she was 39 years old. If your mentor is throwing you flasks of cognac between sets, what's happening the rest of the day? Hey, church, listen to this. She was smart. This was a very brilliant woman. She was gifted. She was talented. She was more popular at one time than Babe Ruth. But there wasn't anybody in her life who could say, you know what? I want to talk to you about thinking better. And it made sense for her to drink every single day because nobody was talking to her about thinking better. She was gifted. She was talented. She was likable. But she didn't have anybody in her life who said, let's talk about some different daily habits. You've got potential. And being drunk every day by two doesn't help you live an awesome life. Church, you know why I'm telling you this? I don't care how talented you are, how gifted you are. I don't care how blessed you are. I don't care what advantages you have in life. Everybody needs somebody in their life who is encouraging them to think right and develop better life habits. Every single one of us do, church. And if we would be more open to that, we would experience more of the peace of God ourselves, and we would be able to share more of the peace of God with others. I'm asking everybody in this room to be open to the idea of letting a mentor in your life. You say, well, Doc, I don't know anybody. I get mentored by people who died 400 years ago. I read a sermon this week by Martin Luther. It was on the passage where he talked about John sent his disciples to Jesus to say, are you the one or do we look for another? He died 400 years ago and he mentored me this week. Church. I read leadership books. I'm a better leader because they're really good at it. I read their book. I try to do what they teach me, and I become a better leader. I've told you this before. I paid $25 for a book that if you took the class, it would probably cost $5,000. I got everything he teaches in that class for $25. And all I have to do is sit down and read it, find some good ideas, and say, this week I'm trying this good idea. Next week I'm trying this good idea. Church, you don't have to sit with somebody face to face to be mentored. It helps. But if you want a mentor, they're out there. Church, what kind of life might you be living if you would open yourself up to a mentor? Our dear Heavenly Father, I call upon your name. I thank you for this teaching that the Apostle Paul gives us. And I pray that each one of us would have the blessing of being mentored.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information about Christ Church, check us out on the web at christchurchohio.org. If we can be of any help to you, call us at 440-236-8282. Until next time, blessings to you.